Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, the perfectional renunciation, text 47. Shreyaswadamo viguna paradharma sunustita svabhavaniyatam karma kurvan natnoti kilvisham shreyan. Better. Sudharma, one's own occupation. Viguna, imperfectly performed. Paradharma, then another's occupation. Anusthitat, perfectly performed. Svabhavaniyatam, prescribed according to one's nature. Karma, work. Kauravan, performing. Na, never. Apnoti, achieves. Kilvisha, sinful reactions. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. Purport. One's occupational duty is prescribed in Bhagavad Gita. As already discussed in previous verses, the duties of a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra are prescribed according to their particular modes of nature. One should not imitate another's duty. A man who is by nature attracted to the kind of work done by Shudras should not artificially claim to be a Brahmana, although he may have been born into a Brahmana family. This way, one should work according to his own nature. No work is abominable if performed in the service of the Supreme Lord. The occupational duty of a Brahmana is certainly in the mode of goodness. But if a person is not by nature in the mode of goodness, he should not imitate the occupational duty of a Brahmana. For a Kshatriya or a administrator, there are so many abominable things. A Kshatriya has to be violent to kill his enemies. And sometimes a Kshatriya has to tell lies for the sake of diplomacy. Such violence and diplomacy accompany political affairs. But a Kshatriya is not supposed to give up his occupational duty and try to perform the duties of a Brahmana. One should act to satisfy the Supreme Lord. For example, Arjuna was a Kshatriya. He was hesitating to fight the other party. But if such fighting is performed for the sake of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then there is no fear of degradation. In the business field also, sometimes a merchant has to tell so many lies to make a profit. If he does not do so, there can be no profit. Sometimes a merchant says, "Oh, my dear customer, for you I am making no profit." But one should know that without profit, the merchant cannot exist. Therefore, it should be taken as a simple lie if a merchant says that he is not making a profit. But the merchant should not think that because he is engaged in an occupation in which the telling of lies is compulsory, he should give up his profession and pursue the profession of a Brahmana. It is not recommended. Whether one is a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, or a Shudra, doesn't matter. He serves by his work, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even Brahmanas, who perform different types of sacrifice, sometimes must kill animals because sometimes animals are sacrificed in such ceremonies. Similarly, if a Kshatriya engaged in his own occupation kills the enemy, there's no sin occurred. In the third chapter, these matters have been clearly and elaborately explained. Every man should work for the purpose of the Yajna, or for Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anything done for personal sense gratification is a cause of bondage. The conclusion is that everyone should be engaged according to the particular mode of nature he has acquired, and he should decide to work only to serve the supreme cause of the Supreme Lord. Shrayan swadamo viguna paradharma sunistitat svavaniyatam karma korvam namnitikil jvisham. It is better to engage one's own occupational, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reaction. Bhagavad Gita has 700 verses and is a summary of, I believe, 1 billion verses from the Vedas. And therefore, any verse that's repeated twice must be of great significance. And this verse is one of the two verses that are repeated twice. The other one being, Manmana Bhamad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskru, Mama Ivaishasi, Yukta Evam, or Atmana Matparayanaha, or Manmana Bhamad Bhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskru, Mama Ivaishasi, Yukta Satyam Te Pratijani Priyosime. So this is repeated in the third chapter. Shayan Swadamo Viguna Paradharma Sunistitat Sadami Yatak Shayat Paradharmo Bayavaha. So basically speaking, duty is essential. As long as one is conditioned by the material nature, one has to act dutifully. And duty means, to begin with, we have to find out what Krishna wants us to do. Now, generally speaking, in normal circumstances, Krishna always wants to perform sacrifice, but in a suitable way. In other words, if there's Yajnavai Vishnu, sacrifice for Vishnu, this body should be utilized appropriately in that sacrifice. Now, in Kali Yuga, the conception of having a duty, especially in terms of a Brahmin or Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, is considered to be terrible, restricting, fascistic, arbitrary, uncreative, dogmatic, authoritarian. But actually, everyone is working according to their nature. Unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, everyone's a Shudra. So everyone's acting like a Shudra. Just like King Parikshit came upon a Shudra dressed as a king who is beating iron, cow, and bull. So that's a perfect description of Kali Yuga. The very people who are supposed to be protecting the cows and the bull are beating on them. That is probably said in Kali Yuga, there's only two classes of people, the cheated and the cheated. The vast majority of people are being cheated, and there's a few people, a few Vaishyas, who are tricking them, so-called Vaishyas, they're actually Naradamas, who are cheating them. So therefore, that's the material world nowadays. And because there's no Dharma, and Dharma is represented by the bull and the cow, because the beating on the cow and bull, there's no Dharma, therefore there's only economic development and sense gratification. And therefore there's no possibility of moksha or liberation. But the aim of human form of life is freedom, to become free from the bodily concept of life. Otherwise it's a failure, whatever we're doing. If at the end of the life we get another body, and what to speak of another body in a lower species of life, then what is the value of whatever we've done in this lifetime? Even they may put a little star next to our name somewhere. But what good is it? How long will the star last? Does anyone remember who had a star 5 million years ago? Who got a star? Does it make any difference? It was probably said they worship Napoleon. Every year in France, they have a big statue of Napoleon, and the workers, they go, they have a big ladder, and they climb up to the statue of Napoleon, and they brush off all the bird stool that's been accumulated for the year on top of his head. If he landed in other parts too. So they brush it off and clean him off once a year. And then there's a ceremony, and at the end of the ceremony, they go away, and the birds come back and give their offerings. So Prabhupada said, here they're worshiping Napoleon, but where's Napoleon? For all we know, he may be one of those birds coming around giving an offering. So what is the value? He was a big, big person in this material world at one time, and now he may be a bird flying somewhere over his statue. And even when we get the body of a demigod, it's only temporary. It's all temporary in the material world. Just going from one body to the next. And one of the major problems is that people don't know what their duty is. And because they don't know what their duty is, therefore they're doing everything wrong. Instead of karma, they're doing vikarma. And vikarma leads inevitably to a lower species of life. Now, of course, Prabhupada said, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, it's not going to be so easy to immediately implement these categories. People are averse to this idea nowadays. If you go to India, it's the Brahmins in Delhi, for instance, who run the toilets. Isn't that right, Nityaseva? You don't know. I have experience like that. Looking for a toilet in the middle of Delhi. Toilet kaha hai. And they pointed me to this place, and it was run by Brahmins. So that's where Brahmins are. That's their occupational duty now. So this is not very practical in Kali Yuga. But Prabhupada said, the Sankirtan movement, we can utilize our talents accordingly. For instance, if someone likes to read and study and likes to explain things as a teacher, then he can utilize that to tell people about Krishna. To try to preach the message of Krishna, that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and not try to take his place as the Supreme, as the most important person in this universe or in anything that we have any significance apart from serving Krishna. And if one likes to manage, and in order to defeat the atheistic propaganda that there's no God, fight like Arjuna for the cause of Krishna, then one can manage the Sankirtan movement. Help organize the Sankirtan movement to defeat the atheistic propaganda. By the way, this Harinama is not just a musical presentation. It's actually meant to deceive the demons, the demoniac mentality. And if the demons aren't agitated by the Sankirtan movement, we should chant a little louder. Outside the temple here, though. At least a block away. Because if they get agitated a block away, what can they do? All they can do is call the police, and we'll be back in the temple by that time. So if one is a Kshatriya, a manager, they should manage the Sankirtan movement. And if one has resources, one is able to gather money or resources, then they should be utilizing the Sankirtan movement. In any case, the whole idea is to develop a taste for hearing and chanting. that while we're doing our duty, whatever our duty for the Sankirtan movement is, and anyone, whatever we're doing, there's no one duty that's really any better than any other duty, because if we're chanting Hare Krishna, if we're actually remembering Krishna, then Krishna accepts any duty we're doing equally. It's not that Krishna loves the pujari, but these people are sweeping the floor, they're useless. You can get them for a dime a dozen. Pujaris are a little hard to come by nowadays. No, Krishna, anything we're doing, if it's done to please Krishna, then Krishna is completely satisfied by that service. And we'll be satisfied too with the whatever service if we're ecstatically in love with Krishna and we experience Krishna's happiness for this, because of the service we're doing. Whatever service we do, we'll be doing will be equally satisfying. The spiritual world, sometimes Hanuman is fanning Lord Ramachandra, sometimes he's massaging his feet. He's just going from one service to the other because he's so ecstatic for the service. But it's the love that Krishna appreciates, the enthusiasm. When Vidura was offering bananas to Krishna, when Krishna came after leaving the attempt at Duryodhana, well, Krishna came to Hastinapur. It wasn't Hastinapur. I guess it was Delhi, New Delhi, whatever. Yeah, it was Hastinapur. In order to try to make peace with the Kauravas, between the Kauravas and the Pandavas. But Duryodhana wouldn't have anything to do with peace. Instead, he tried to capture Krishna, which wasn't very successful, obviously. So Krishna left, because Duryodhana was going to give him this big feast, but he didn't want to take food from a non-devotee. So he went to Vidura's house, and Vidura was so ecstatic that Krishna came to his house that he offered him bananas, because that's all he had in his house. But he took the banana and threw it away and offered Krishna the peels. So because it was offered in ecstasy out of love, Krishna ate the peels very happily. Because I'm sure nowadays they'd say that they have more nutrition in the peels than they do in the banana, which is probably true. But Krishna's not a vitamin freak. In any case, Krishna accepts the love of the service. Still, we should do an appropriate service. Otherwise, we won't be able to do it very long. If you try to put a square peg in a round hole, you know, it won't be very successful. So we have the nature that we like to preach, or we have the nature we like to organize, we have the nature we like to gather resources. And if we think, well, the Brahmins, they get all the maha first, so let me become a Brahmin. Well, let me become, even worse than that, let me become a sannyasi. Maybe I'll attract some ladies. Now no one recognizes me. No one, I have no access to the maha. No one gives me any respect. Now let me become a sannyasi and I'll get respect. I'll get the maha. The ladies will swoon when they see me, when they see my danda. They'll say, oh, sadhu. So we may take shelter of a particular occupation for the wrong reasons, and we'll generally get degraded, because the occupation we're supposed to be doing, we won't do, so we won't get that benefit, and maybe we'll be taking over someone else's service, so we'll be getting the offense of doing something we're not supposed to be doing, and supplanting or taking over something that someone else is supposed to be doing. So one should figure out what one's duty. First of all, it should be clear what one's duty is. Just like in the temple here, everyone should know what their duty is. Not that we wake up and whatever we feel like doing that day, we do, because we're all in the spontaneous platform. We'll wind up one day, we'll wake up, we'll think, well, maybe I should put on a sari, try to be a gopi for a while. If we're not careful in following our duty, the mind can concoct any kind of duty. whatever it feels like doing. If we do whatever we feel like doing, we'll wind up doing things which are really not very desirable. And you get together two people to support each other. They're convinced it's right. You don't need a whole lot of people to be convinced what you're ever doing is absolute. You just need one or two people to tell you it's all right. You think, well, it's supported. They're devotees. They have a Sikha and they have a, on Jamasmi, they were a Dodi. So they're devotees. So whatever they tell me, I'm serving a devotee. And, you know, they invite me to go to the movies, then I go with them. Because I want to make the devotees happy. And if the devotees are happy, I go to the movie, then good. Then Krishna is pleased. So this kind of understanding is wrong. We have to find out from higher authorities what our duty is and stick to it. Not that we serve whatever whim we come up with or as other people come up with. We think that that's my duty. My duty is to serve the devotees. So whatever crazy thing they come up with, I follow. In the name of service, even this ISKCON, they've done so many things that have simply gotten us into trouble. Because, in any case, so our first business, according to Shastra, find out what the duties are. And of course, our duties are all involved in the Sankirtan movement. And at the same time, if we accept the positions of Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyasi, we can't just say, well, I accepted this position, but I'm a spiritual being, and I'm a devotee of Krishna, so I don't really have to follow it very strictly. That's called illusion. In other words, if one accepts a position, then one has to follow it, or else one becomes offensive. Only when one becomes completely transcendental to the modes of material nature, and directly under Krishna's control, can one actually take another type of duty. But if we're still in the bodily concept of life, and that takes some honesty. If we think, well, I'm actually liberated, I don't identify with the body. Really. So if we say you're supposed to fast for a week, no problem because you're not the body, right? What are you talking about? No, as long as it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, as long as one takes pleasure in drinking and eating, one is not liberated. If we still think we're this body to some extent, then we're not liberated. And we should accept the duties that are corresponding to the body that we have, even if we're doing it in the Sankirtan movement, but we shouldn't artificially try to act like a Brahmin, like a scholar, when I can't even, you know, every time I read the Bhagavad Gita, my eyes close and I go deep into trance. And no one can get me out of it until 8 hours later. I shouldn't try to pretend that now I'm a great scholar. Like Sanatana Goswami and the jail keeper. Sanatana Goswami told the jail keeper that please liberate me, because as you've read in the Quran, that anyone who liberates a person in jail, he goes back to he goes to heaven. And you're a great scholar, so you obviously know that from the Quran. So if a normal person is told that, he thinks, well, he's just trying to flatter me to get out of here. But the jailkeeper thought, well, yeah, of course. I know the Quran. I'm a great scholar. Sanatana Goswami, who's a scholar, tells me I'm a scholar. I must be a scholar. So of course it says that in the Quran. Although he probably never couldn't even read the Quran. So see, that was one of the impetuses to let Sanatana Goswami out of the jail, besides the 8,000 gold coins he gave him. So we shouldn't be fooled by others that we're doing exactly the right thing when they don't even know what they're doing. They don't even know what their duty is. And when you mix things together, for instance, sannyas with guruship, and you start thinking, well, I'm a guru, so I can do whatever I want because I'm transcendental. To what? It's not that because I become a guru, I become transcendental. Or because I'm a sannyasi, I automatically have all the qualities of fearlessness, knowledge, and purity, just because I get a position. That's the same thing it says at the end of Kali Yuga, that just if you get a five-piece thread, then you're considered a Brahmin. Like in India, if you go into Vrindavan, the rickshaw walls, some of them are Brahmins. And at the end of the ride, they'll ask you for Brahmin dakshin. They want extra money for the rickshaw ride because a Brahmin took you to Loy Bazaar. And they take out their thread, which was never washed since they got it, to prove that they're a Brahmin. So that kind of Brahmins are not really necessary. They can't really help spiritual advancement. Similarly, if we take a position as sannyasi and we live in a complete life of luxury, you know, that's not exactly what sannyasi is meant for. It's meant we can have assistance to do our service, but we don't have to live in a palace and every day someone brings a menu to us to find out what's for first course, second course, third course, and dessert. It's not necessary. One has to fulfill, at least to, I mean, Prabhupada had cook, but Prabhupada didn't eat, you know, gulab jamuns every day, and pakoras, and you know, he had a diet, he had a menu that he followed. And sometimes he'd have, you know, take the prasad and the feast, but Prabhupada, to one extent or another, according to what was proper, he acted as a sannyasi. He didn't have women massage his feet. Prabhupada did service 24 hours a day. But especially, he had proper relations with women, with everyone. Not that he was a sannyasi, and because he was a guru, he was a liberated soul, and therefore he could do whatever he wanted. So everyone has to do that. Householders have to know charity, dana, dhamma, sajagnas, cha. If you tell the householders nowadays, or anyone in our movement, that probably said the householders should get 50% of their income, immediately they say, oh, you're ridiculous. So then they won't give anything. Because they hear, well, 50%, that's ridiculous. No one can give 50%. So I'm not going to give anything. No, Prabhupada said Rupa Goswami gave 50%. And that's ideal. But one should give something. Because that's the duty of a householder. To give something. It's the duty of a householder to control their senses. And just like it's the duty of the brahmacharis control their senses, everyone to control their senses. So especially it's the duty of the householder. And if they can do that, they make great spiritual advancement. And sacrifice, their life is meant for sacrifice. As the brahmachari life is meant for self-study and spiritual advancement of consciousness and all the other qualities. Brahmachari guru kule vasandanta guru arhitam asavan natyavo nicho dora. Guru Sarida Surida. So the brahmacharis, they have duties to perform. And not that I'm a brahmachari, but I can just do whatever, you know, I'm a brahmachari, but this is Kali Yuga, I'm a Kali Yuga brahmachari. I have my own apartment. I just prepare whatever I want. And if they ask me for some service, I check my calendar. and my favorite TV show is on, so I can't possibly do that service. Besides that, I have a date tonight, so how can I... how can I do that service? No, if one is going to take the position of a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, one should know what the duties are and try to fulfill them. Otherwise, what's the sense of pretending that I'm such and such designation when I don't even know what the duties are? And no one else knows what they are, so who cares? We make it up as we go along. No, they're all in the Shastra. And by fulfilling them, then we can control our mind and senses and engage in Krishna service so that we can actually become Krishna conscious. Krishna will actually reveal himself. It's not that Krishna is fooled because Krishna sees the color of our dhoti, and then we do whatever we want, but he said, well, it's still, his color is all right, so it's all right. Now, Krishna is not such a fool. He'll reveal himself in proportion to our sincerity, and part of our sincerity is the willingness to follow what we're supposed to, actually understand what our duties are with his body and fulfill them, especially to sacrifice for the Sankirtan movement. Then we can become Krishna conscious. Otherwise, it will be impossible. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes. We have a microphone.
There are these people who are somehow dutiful, but they do some duty, some so-called duty, like they have a job or something, which is outside Parmashrama Dharma. There's no yaga. So is this kind of duty purifying or helpful?
You mean I go to the butcher shop, dutifully every day. I'm even early because I like chopping the meat. Do I get some special credit for that? Yeah, Yamaraj will give you a special place. No, duties mean duty, as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, anad bhavati bhutani bharjan karma brabod bhavan vidhi. Karma brabod bhavan vidhi means the duties are assigned in the Vedas. We don't just make up duties, as we call it. The Vedas give us duty. And one who's outside the duties of the Vedas are considered yavanas or malechas, or lower than that. They're just interested in gratifying their senses. There's no alternative. We should know what's duty and what is not duty by the Shastra, Krishna says. Tasma Shastram Pramanam Te, Karya Karya Vyastito, Gyatva Shastram Vidanokta, Karma Kartam Viharasi. One should know what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of Shastra. And knowing such duties, one should act so that gradually he can become purified. So Shastra tells us what our duties are. And that's the end of the 16th chapter. And then we come to the 17th chapter, where Arjuna says, what about one who follows some so-called duty, according to who's in the modes of nature? What does that get to him? What does he get as a result of that? So Krishna doesn't agree either there. He said if you worship in the mode of ignorance, you're worshiping ghosts and spirits. You worship in the mode of passion, you're worshiping some demons. You worship in the mode of goodness, you're worshiping the demigods. It's not that everything gets you, whatever it is. Everything arrives at the same place. No matter what path you take, you wind up at the same place. You take the path to Maribor, you wind up in Paris. It doesn't work that way. Yes.
For example, devotee devotees who are secondly initiated in our society, and they have to work outside, job, which is not exactly a Brahminical occupation, but is their position.
What's their position? Well, it depends where their consciousness is at. I mean, we're not naham vapi no chara patir, naham vapi no sudra. Our position is as devotees, if we're practicing devotees, sincere practicing devotees, with the sadhana and we're performing our service to the movement, giving whatever work we're doing, giving a contribution to the movement, then our position is that of a devotee. As Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, there are people working in factories. Apparently, they're just like everyone else, but if they're actually working for Krishna, giving the results of their work to Krishna, they're not, they're sannyasis.
Establishment.
Well, I don't know. I don't think in our lifetime we're going to see established. But, you know, it's already there. It's eternal. Vanashram Dharma is eternal. But it's going to be established when we when we take our position rightly in the Sankirtan movement to begin with and distribute it to others. And those who don't accept the Sankirtan movement, they'll be obliged to participate in agricultural work just to eat and assist, you know, organize the society amongst themselves in a sane way, protect the cows. That will be obligatory. People won't have a choice if they want to survive. But that we're not in that position right now. Our so-called Brahmins don't even sometimes chant the Gayatri Mantra. What to speak of, you know, establishing Varnashram in society. They don't even know how to milk a cow. No, that will come later. It's a natural, when Prabhupada said, when we spread the movements sufficiently or extensively, and people don't necessarily want to act as pure devotees, follow sadhana, they have other interests. But still, they'll organize themselves. And there'll be people, especially when there's people protecting cows, then there'll have to be people protecting them, and there'll have to be people assisting them, and they'll have, you know, etc. And there'll be guides, etc. So that will be established naturally in the course of time. When people are desperate, and when the devotees have sufficient capacity and intelligence and organizational skill, then they naturally organize around something like Varnashram Dharma.
Last question. Many times we see that the devotees have to do the needful. How far is this according to our
Well, it depends what we call the needful. If the needful is the house is burning down, we could probably, if your belongings in it, you can probably keep on throwing water for a while. Although that's not your occupational duty. The needful, I don't know. Generally, people should be engaged. Devotees should be engaged also, according to their what it makes them enthusiastic and is fulfilling to them. I mean, emergencies can only last so long before the person who's trying to solve the emergency becomes an emergency themselves. So people should be satisfied by their occupation. But it should be productive. Not that my occupation is, you know, reviewing television programs. See which ones are worthy for devotees to watch. I watch them all. And no, we have to do something meaningful for spreading Krishna consciousness. At the same time, you know, with some kind of, well, if we do that, we should be assured that Krishna will provide our basic necessities at least. Yes. Flip a coin and pray to Krishna. No, what does it matter? Our main duty is to chant Hare Krishna, and at least in the temple. Outside, I mean, how many people are putting up signs looking for 40% Vaishya, 30% Kshatriya, 10% Brahmin? I mean, most of the occupations are, and if we're working on outside, it's not really going to Varna, for the most part. But if we're attracted to something, we can do it, and it gives us some finances. That's why people, even devotees, that's why they take certain occupations. It's not that because it fits their nature, because we can't figure out what our nature is in Kali Yuga. Purifications gradually. The purification, maybe gradually we'll get attracted to hearing and chanting, more sattvic occupations. But then, you know, in the meantime, most of the devotees are just mostly concerned with their maintenance, not exactly an occupation that fits the psychophysical nature. But it's always a mix in Kali Yuga. Mostly a mix, not of the higher qualities, but of the lower ones. We hardly find anyone born as a pure Brahmin, like Sukadeva Goswami nowadays. But by devotional service, we become purified, and therefore our taste gradually changes, and what was a suitable occupation at one time may not be so desirable at another time. But Krishna will provide. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the lectures. You're speaking about that Grihastha should give 50% of their income. So what about if Grihastha sometimes their income is like book distribution? We see that
average. Oh, that's a general. That's general. First of all, I don't know anyone who gets 50%. I hardly know anyone who gives 1% or 10%. But if they give something of their occupation, then I mean, you have to be practical. It's not that because I'm a devotee, my wife lives in the forest and her dress is made of bark leaves, the bark of the trees. You have to be practical. So whatever, if our occupation is book distribution, you know, then you have to, I don't know how many devotees are, do you know, of grihasthas with children, make a living by distributing books. So it's not one of the major concerns to figure out. But if it was, then, you know, obviously they probably wouldn't have enough to give. If they gave 50%, it wouldn't, they'd have nothing left over, practically speaking. They'd be Kolavekar Sridhar, who was selling banana leaves and bananas in Bengal, which is full of bananas and leaves. You can get them off the tree. So obviously he was making a lot of money, but still he's giving 50% of his income to worship the Gandhis. But I think the only thing left he had to eat was bananas, or maybe only the leaves. Because he didn't, and he lived in a hut with holes in it. And he had an iron pot, rusty iron pot to drink water from. So obviously we can't imitate Kulavik or Sridhar. Especially the householder. I don't think his wife and children would be very happy living in a hut with holes in it, eating banana leaves. Oh, we have to be practical also. What's that?
Those examples. Ramana Swami and Sridhar, they are pure devotees.
Well, we're also supposed to be pure devotees. I don't think there's a category of service for impure devotees. We're supposed to try to become pure devotees, but that's a gradual process. And, you know, Prabhupada never asked at the time of initiation what percentage of income are you giving. It's an ideal. Not to be discarded if one is sufficiently advanced spiritually and economically. If you're making $5 million a year, you could probably give 50% with no problem. If you're making, you know, $5,000 a year and you have three kids, 5,000 euros a year, it's not expected you're going to give 2,500 and each kid is going to live off of 50 cents a day. It's not expected like that. It's practical. Anything else? Graha Khwala Grantarai Shrimad Bhagavad Gita Kijai.